Here we are on the banks of the Royal Canal in Dublin's north inner city. And it was in this water that I swam as a young man. This really was our swimming pool. This is also where we hung out when we mitched from school. And I had the unenviable job of being sent out from school to ask the mitchers to come in.
Pancho Nolan, you're wanted. School inspector's looking for you, Pancho. I'm not messing. Stick me head in a bucket of shite if I'm lying, Pancho. True as God.
My name is Martin Drury and I'm directing Peter Sheridan's new play, Finders Keepers at the Peacock. And the director is a bit like the head chef in the restaurant. There are several other chefs working, but you have to have, as director, responsibility for bringing the whole thing together. I mean, essentially, in the pre-rehearsal period, it's about working with the text. In this case, because it's a new play and the writer is alive and kicking, there's been a lot of work between Peter and myself in terms of getting to this point. So text work, rewrites, edits, a kind of a trust and a kind of a sharing of the script and the ideas and the story and the characters between himself and myself. And that, in fact, in this particular case, is continuing because Peter's staying, you know, close enough to the rehearsal period so there can be script changes and all of that during the rehearsals.
Yeah. I think we should have this... We should have this second option. I mean, whatever about Donal, if we discovered that it wasn't possible, you know, to wet yourself excessively on stage, albeit hidden from view, we might find that we get away with it with Donal. But even Donal would need to be there from about 8 o'clock once the house has been let in.
No, in the second half, they've got to take their togs off.
Oh, no.
That's why the towel, they got with the towel, you see.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So to take the togs off.
That's a whole lot of business, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we put a few supports where applicable, and if you need anything else, the bracer. But the three-quarter plates in the base should hold out if there's any.
That's,
you know,
grand. They won't be seen, you see.
No,
you won't
see.
You might actually just catch that a sight of the floor here.
Right.
So just be aware of that under here.
The end of this is going to be boxed up in three-quarter.
Yeah.
You know, just to be too heavy to use other timbers in it.
Oh, yeah. There are ideas to talk about, really, so we get to help kind of think about the characters and to give the wardrobe people an impression of the kind of period and the sort of clothes we're looking for. But things could easily change, like, for instance, the uniforms, whether they're in uniform or not, or maybe they a bit more in uniform at the end when Pancho comes back in, or going away clothes, you know, he gets on something to go away. So we don't know yet exactly. And the old ladies, again, I mean, how much they're going to look like real witches, I don't know at this stage. Actually, I've spent a bit of time in the photographic library, you know, the National Photographic Library. I've gone through all their files and I've been looking in books as well, photographs of Dublin, you know, in the 60s and things like that. And I have a few books on the 60s, but mostly from photographs of I've found pictures of Cumberland Street Market in the 1960s and things like that, you know, for the women's clothes. And I also actually rang a few people and I got some photos sent me by somebody who was at school in that area in that time, and he had photos of himself in school and friends. And
it's a new play. It's actually set in the same locale that the theatre is situated in. The play is set on the Royal Canal near the mouth of the river. In Dublin 1, the theatre is also in Dublin 1. So geographically and spiritually, you would think its home is in the theatre closest to where the play takes place.
To me, the biggest statement that the Abbey makes is what has it decided to put on its stages. I see a measure of conservatism there, a lack of ability or desire to take real risks. In that, for example, there are no new plays being staged on the Abbey main stage during the centenary, when the Abbey has insisted throughout its life and continues to insist that it's a writer's theater. The relationship between the Abbey and the Peacock, I think, has always been, there will always be not necessarily a contention, but a tension there in terms of, well, what is the Peacock, the place where the small work happens? What does small mean? Is small not as important as big? All of those questions come up. I personally am someone that gravitates towards experimental work, towards risky work, towards the kind of stuff that would be in a black box rather than a big proscenium stage. That's just my personal predilection. So the peacocks of the world are the places where my attention and energy would go. I think that under Ben Barnes, there's been a desire and action taken to help the peacock develop its own identity by hiring its own director in Ali Curran, and by there being a certain amount of dialogue being generated by the theater about it being a site for the new, the experimental, the cross-disciplinary.
Once you get into a theater of over 400 or 500 seats, the Abbey is 660, you're into a space that has to be programmed in a particular way. You can't be putting on work that you think is really for a small audience in a big theatre. I would have to say that in a space like the Peacock, you can afford to take more risks, you can afford to take more chances. It's 150 seats, 80 people feels like a crowd in the Peacock, you know. So you don't have the same constraints of having to make commercial sense. So very much the Peacock has always been seen in a kind of a way as the experimental arm of the bigger theatre, and the place where you can afford to take chances. You know, ironically, Finders Keepers has become a big commercial success for the theatre. You know, totally on word of mouth, the theatre's been filling every night, just with people who've been coming and obviously ringing their friends to say, you know, this is a really interesting new play, very entertaining, very funny, very warm, very evocative, very sentimental. All of the things that I like myself when I go to see a play, I like all those things. Although we seem to be a little bit afraid of sentiment in Ireland right now, I have no problem with it. I like plays that make my eyes well up with tears.
You can see, like, this is just additional script I've written in here. This is one page towards quite a few changes. So therefore, I've had to write it on the other side. Eventually, this will get retyped again, and I'll have a nice clean sheet, but it's too early in the day to go and do that, because there may still be a couple of alterations there. Just going on to another page, you can see I've numbers marked at various lines on the script, and 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then on the left hand side I've got the 1, 2, 3, 4, and that corresponds to the line in the script, and that tells me what I was saying about the blocking. Tells me what was happening on that particular line, or what the actor was doing, as I say, whether they were moving upstage, downstage, making an exit, or whatever.
Feces is a proper name for shite, did you know that? FAECES. I wrote it in an essay once. 9.5 fingers called me up to the top of the class and asked me to explain it. That's our teacher, Brother Dennehy. Everyone calls him 9.5 fingers because half his little finger's missing. A boy at another school bit it off him. Should have got a medal for doing it. But he got sent to Artane instead. That's where you go if you're too young for jail. 9.5 asked me what feces was. I didn't want to say shite, so said nothing. You're using big words and you don't know what it means. I do know what it means, I said. He was waiting for me to say shite so he could give me a clatter.
Well, I just fell in love with the play. I mean, the Finders Keepers actually had a history with another theatre, and through various circumstances it wasn't able to go ahead. My primary function really is to develop programmes for the Peacock Stage, which are hopefully reflective of contemporary Irish culture. So I would be looking at, obviously, commissioning and the writers that we commission across the spectrum, in terms of gender, in terms of age, in terms of subject, in terms of the regional, the urban, Northern Irish, Southern Irish. And then also looking at where our responsibility lies towards kind of the evolving language of theatre, you know, how do we embrace nonverbal theatre, for example, which is increasingly becoming an area of interest for young directors who want to work maybe with more visual aids and less, you know, text-oriented work, and how do we introduce work from other countries, other writing, you know, other styles. So that's my primary function is to have an overarching kind of eye kept on the programme and the policy, and hopefully present work that is interesting, entertaining and exciting and reflective of, you know, 21st century Ireland.
The Abbey is very good at bringing in people from all over the country, from different aspects of the theatre culture. People who, you know, would have been, you know, say in Ali's case, involved with the Fringe Festival. Suddenly she's there in the Abbey, or in the Peacock, you know, in the heart of things. And in a sense, that has always been the Abbey's strength as an institution, you know. And I think that's where their strength in the future will lie, is to be able to draw the people in who are working perhaps outside the mainstream and pull them into the heart of it. In many ways, that has been always where the Abbey has seen its future. I mean, since the Peacock opened in the current building, it was always very much, you know, this is where we're going to develop the new work. And while it's a very, very nice space, there are obvious limitations to it. And I think that, you know, something with more capacity, if you like, in terms of particularly technical capacity, could produce a whole new generation of very, very different Irish writing.
Can you, Aaron, take it back from come back into school for the rest of the day? Come on, yeah.
Come on into school for the rest of the day. If they're only giving us trouble, we can't leave these bottles here. Someone will nick them. Put them in the side of the pipe. There's 2 shillings worth of bottles there. Get the money on them and then come into school. Why couldn't Stephen spew up money in my pocket? That's worse than Chinese Taj. Spend the money and then come to school.
Okay, so there is something, I'm not sure that that's absolutely right, but there is something about the pushing that, I think, that might be, you know, when we come back after the break, I think we'll look at that, you know, because it's quite, I think we might be too early with it. It might be that you take the first one. Excuse me, there's 2 shillings worth there. And don't mind him. Is that, don't mind him, Reds or something?
A lot of it initially is about reading, talking about the text, talking about the characters, then getting up on your hind legs, as the actors say, onto the floor, and beginning to bring it alive physically, so that you start to see, I suppose, the dynamics of the relationships, because in many ways, outside of text and outside of words, many of the relationships are conveyed through the physical interaction, the way people stand, the way people sit, the way people move, the way people group together or don't group together, all of that. And I think, you know, as a live art form, theatre is very dependent, particularly, I suppose, text-based theatre. You know, there's always a danger that it will just sort of sit down and become a kind of a talking experience. So you've to really very quickly get up on the floor and start to establish how the text comes alive, not simply in the mouths of the actors, but also in the kind of the physical interaction.
Well, I've been at the Abbey 8 years now, and I work on all the productions. So yeah, Phelim, who plays the character of Pancho, you know, he is really the only actor who does come from Dublin and has the authentic accent. So we're trying to pull, you know, the other actors kind of closer towards his accent, at the same time as being sure that, you know, all the voices and all the text is clear and open. One of the things about Finders Keepers is that there's young actors, and the young actors are playing even younger characters. So that's a challenge. I mean, how do you, you know, the actors are, I mean, just in their early 20s, but they're playing 14-year-olds. And so, you know, you don't want to, you know, you want to be sure that you are authentic enough as that sort of teenage boy or teenage girl. So that's a challenge. And also, you know, the actors are early on in their career. So again, it's, you know, it's about, they're getting used to the stage. They're getting used to, it's not a big stage, the Peacock, but you still need, you know, clarity, and you need to know what you're doing. So, yeah, that's the kind of challenges I'm facing with this one, really. You know, an accent and youth, I suppose.
The play really came from 2 separate ideas, 2 events that happened almost 30 years apart. When I was a young fella, I remember in school, one of my best friends, his father was a docker. And working down on the docks, the really privileged dockers had what was called a button, which was like a right to work. It was a badge. And I remember my friend's father sold his button, which was unheard of. It was like selling your birthright. The implication of it was that the son would now not have a job on the docks when he left, when he graduated from school or did his primary cert or whatever. And I always remember that sticking in my head. And then the story afterwards was that he drank the money and gambled it and didn't put it to any good use. 30 years later, an event happened. There were two old sisters across the road, two Protestant sisters across the road, and they were in their 80s and 90s. The two sisters were broken into. And my mother actually saw the men who robbed the house running away, knocked on my door. I went over to investigate, and I found these bags full of money, stuffed with £5, £10 notes. Now, these two old dears never had a penny. They used to sort of beg out in the street because we lived near Crow Park. And on match days, they'd be out begging on the street, asking people for money. And I was just astonished that all this money was in the house. So I kind of combined the two stories. I just thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if when I was a kid that we had stumbled upon that money and my friend whose father had sold his button would then have the facility to buy the button back? Wouldn't that be a wonderful moral dilemma for young people to have?
Very often in the first week, and what I'm certainly doing in the first 2 weeks, I suppose, of this rehearsal period is I'm working 1 week on Act One and 1 week on Act Two, and by the time we start Act Three, hopefully the play will be well sketched. It takes time. Sometimes the sketch that you've made, of course, when you go back to it, is no longer useful to you. But at least it means that you're starting with that. And John Stapleton, who's the stage director, will be putting the moves, you know, in pencil, into the prompt book, into the book of the show. And therefore, if we come back to a scene 6 or 7 days after we've first done it, there's a sort of a record, in case any of us have forgotten, of how it was at that point. Now, that record is not meant to be a straitjacket, but it's a kind of a scaffolding for us to say, okay, well, that's where we were the last time. And that's in that slow way, I suppose, over a period of weeks. You know, the actors learn their lines, they learn their moves, but they're learning internally. It's in the physical reality of the moves and of the lines that they actually also begin to kind of become more and more familiar with the character.
He knows he done wrong. He wants to get that button back. He wants to pass it on to you, just like his father. Dan knows he messed that up, Pancho. He's not all bad. It's been very hard for him without Mammy.
Don't start me on that.
He misses her terrible. You're not the only one who does, you know.
And who killed Mammy? Me or him?
No one killed her. She died of cancer.
That's not what he thinks. He blames me.
I was there when the doctor came out to him. I was beside him. He started to cry right there in the corridor.
He should have been at home with her instead of being in the pub. He killed her. That's what I think.
At root, art does not exist without the self of the artist and the other of the viewer or whoever, member of the audience. The engagement that I believe is necessary is a process of investigation into what a national theatre could be, without presuming we know what conclusion we'll come to. So rather than saying, we have a national theatre, this is what it is, and therefore this is what it should do, and this is how it should be funded and so forth, it would be very interesting for the national theatre, as presently constituted, to engage in a period of, if you like, research and investigation through practice and through programming into what a national theatre was, is, and needs to be in the future.
The challenge that any theatre, that's a national theatre, has to face is the basic problem that theatre as a form is not national. In this sense, that theatre happens in a particular place at a particular time on a certain night. It's an event. So unlike something like, say, radio or television, which happens all over the country at the same moment and is national in that way, theatre, in a sense, is local. or regional. So in order to be national, the theatre has to either tour or it has to bring the audience from around the nation to itself. And while the Abbey has tried to do both those things in varying degrees over the years, I don't think anybody's ever really thought that through in terms of the function of a national theatre. So I think one of the things that the Abbey perhaps might want to try and think through over the next century, if you like, is how it becomes fully national in that sense, how it becomes a theatre for the whole nation.
All the more discussion that we can have, the more Abbey debates, the more articles written, the more open, frank exchange of views that might get heated, I would welcome that. Because if you look at the precedent of Patrick Mason's dialogue with the Theatre of the Nation, if you look at the precedent of the gate controversy of recent years, I think we're all in a better place for having publicly talked about those preconceptions and biases. At this stage in its history, to be opening up its doors and saying, let's all of us talk about what we're doing and what you're doing and what you think of us, because the Abbey does, yes, underfunded, but yes, the Abbey does get the lion's share of resources, government resources for theatre in this country, and as such, it has privilege and responsibility.
People get hung up on buildings in Ireland, I suppose because of our history. I've never believed that the building is the issue. I've always believed that the ideas are the issue. You know, the building can change. I remember when the Abbey opened in 67, 66, 67, and people talking about this great new state-of-the-art theatre. Well, what went wrong? Like 30, 35 years later, people are not saying the Gaiety doesn't work as a space. They're not saying the Olympia doesn't work as a space. But they're saying this Abbey Theatre, that was the flagship project, doesn't work as a space. And it is true. It doesn't work. It, in many ways, it was a disaster. That has to be recognised. That has to be acknowledged. And now it's been disastrous, not just in terms of the plays and the lack of facilities for the players and what you can do on the Abbey stage. It's also not been a good space for audiences. You think of my plays on the Peacock. It doesn't have wheelchair access in 2004. It's criminal, actually. When you think that where we're at now, and you talk about national and the idea that something is available to all of the people and represents all of the people, then it should be at the forefront of making theatre accessible to the largest number of people, and particularly to those who are marginalised. So that obviously brings in the whole question of the touring responsibility, that the Abbey have a responsibility to get out there on the road. Well, we all know that within the cutbacks of the last 2 years, nobody has been able to afford to tour theatre. You know, it's been one of the great shames brought upon us by the cutbacks.
I think there are two issues there, at least. One of which is that when the current Abbey was built, it was built, I think, almost as a renunciation of the Abbey's earlier heritage. That the plays in which the Abbey's reputation, if you like, is based, going back to the beginning of the 20th century, plays of Sing, plays of O'Casey, were written for a much, much smaller stage. And if you look closely at those plays, look at Sing, look at O'Casey, there are plays about claustrophobia. There are plays where people can't get away from each other. You know, O'Casey's characters tear each other to bits because they can't get out of each other's paths. And it's the same with Sing's plays. So that big stage has always presented a problem in terms of presenting the plays from the Abbey's past. So I think that's one fundamental problem, is the need for a more flexible stage, if you like, a more intimate stage, perhaps. But then the other thing, of course, is with the development of new Irish writing and the ways in which perhaps Irish writing could be pushed forward using a different kind of stage arrangement. Now, I know that's been done in the Peacock, but I think there's certainly a lot more scope for that kind of work with a different kind of theatre.
I sort of think it misses the whole point of what needs to be done in the next period. I think it would be very interesting if everybody stopped talking about a new building and decided that, if you like, instead of saying, what sort of vessel will we have? And then wondering about what sort of content the vessel will hold. I would be very keen personally to see a much more highly developed investigation of what the content needs to be, and then let the vessel take form around that. We know throughout Europe that amazing theatre as practice can be done in any space. It has been done. Peter Brook's theatre outside Paris is a semi-demolished cinema. Theatre is a thing. You don't need theatres to have theatre. But it all depends on your definition of theatre.
When the Abbey started, there was no other subsidised theatre. Indeed, the Abbey was the first subsidised theatre in Europe, let alone Ireland. Since the birth of Druid, now 25 years ago-ish, we now have a whole realm of professionals making theatre in a subsidised environment in Ireland.
Logically, Martin McDonagh should have happened in the Abbey Theatre, so that the Abbey's remit, while being true to itself, its place in the national scene has changed with the development of all this new work, all these new writers, all these new theatres, so that the Abbey doesn't kind of quite have the same, say, cutting-edge clout as it would have had when it was the only seriously producing new Irish work theatre.
There are companies around the country who would very much say, well, we are as much a national theatre as the Abbey. I think, you know, already, you know, I've heard people refer to Druid as a kind of national theatre. And certainly in the way in which, you know, say companies like Druid would open plays, you know, sort of more or less simultaneously in Galway and London, they are as much international ambassadors of theatre or national ambassadors of theatre as the Abbey. I think the answer perhaps is, if you look at the Abbey's history, the one thing the Abbey has always been very, very good at is bringing in talent, whether writing talent, acting, directing, design, from all over the country, that somebody will start doing something somewhere in the country. And just because the Abbey has the sheer critical mass, because it's the biggest, it draws people in. And it consistently has drawn in the best. I do think that there are perhaps limits to what anyone can do in a four-week rehearsal period, but also with the kind of expectation that comes with an Abbey play, that you've got four-week rehearsal and there's so much going on and there's such an expectation at the end of it, this is going to be a play on the stage of the National Theatre, that it's much less flexible than, say, the kind of things that, say, Rough Magic have done to nurture new writing and actually have a mentoring program where a director would mentor a new writer.
In Ireland, generally, rehearsal periods are 4 weeks. I mean, that's become the norm, and it is a problem in the sense in which it's quite different from, say, European theatres, where and obviously there's no absolute rule on this, but the it'd be much more common to have 8 or 10 weeks abroad. So it is one of the frustrations of being a director, I suppose, is that to a certain extent you're at one level trying to explore and keep options open and give people the freedom, but on the other hand, and I suppose this is another responsibility of the director, is to kind of bring the plane into land, you know, on schedule. There's the expectation of the Peacock or of the Abbey, if they have a director in, is that he or she is reasonably able to, on day one of rehearsal, put everybody into the plane and take them up into the air. But the expectation is that 4 weeks later they'll land that plane more or less ready for an audience to begin to see it.
They're 4 weeks in a rehearsal room, and suddenly you're going on the stage is a huge change. Actors will always say they can't wait till they get to the stage, but when they do get there that first day, it's a huge change for them, because it is so different from the rehearsal room. No matter how much people like myself and the stage manager try to replicate things in the rehearsal room, being on stage is what it's all about. And so again, particularly with a new play, you want to try out ideas. You're not too sure whether something is going to work or not. That's why you need an audience there. And it allows the director and the actors to meet up the next day, think about the performance, little changes they might make, and to bring out the best in that performance. And that's what the preview is for, because when you get to the opening night, hopefully and normally that's where everyone is happy they've arrived. This is the end product, and it's just a matter of repeating that then for the rest of the run. But the preview allows you sort of a margin of error. It allows you to make the changes, to make that adjustment.
You and keep an eye on the house.
I'm sick minding it. Me eyes are getting cross from staring at it. I won't watch it anymore. I'm not a gare dog, am I, Redzer?
Don't think so. Never heard you bark.
If I was a dog itself, I'd get scraps. She won't buy meat, Redzer.
We can't afford meat.
What about our pensions?
What about a rainy day?
It's not raining today.
Get back and mind the house, or I'll put you somewhere you don't like.
I don't like the coal shed.
Hope you don't put her in the coal shed, do you?
It's too good for.
Do you have a coal shed, Redzer?
Yeah, we have one out the back.
Do you like it?
No, it's dark and it's dirty.
I don't mind the dark. I'm used to the dark. It's the dust gets up your nose and into your eyes.
Don't put her in the coal shed, Sally.
Someone has to give the orders. I'm the eldest.
Martin and Peter are both well known to me, and we met and I read the play, and what I loved most about it, apart from, you know, Peter's fantastic, you know, visual textured writing, which is just so easy to spend time with, was the fact that it was set in this constituency. It was set in this location. It's about, you know, young lads hanging out on the canal literally 5 minutes from this theatre, and I was really find that really appealing to have a piece of work that actually talks about this area, and an area that has changed so much in the last, certainly since Peter was writing, the period Peter's writing about in the 70s, but even changed so much in the last 10 years, you know, with the IFSC and the Docklands development around that area. You know, it's almost irrecognisable, and there's only that little tiny pocket of old Dublin left. And I loved the story that he was telling about about a time that seems to be forgotten about, because visually the area has changed so much, but yet those communities are still living there. Those people are still very much alive and well and in the pubs and telling the stories and telling the yarns, you know. And I thought it was a really good way for us to open our celebrations for our 100-year anniversary, to have a play that was very much about the location of this theatre and where the people live around it, you know.
I'm also a director. I also direct myself. So I kind of have to be careful, you know, on one level. It's Martin's piece now, the director and the actors. I always say there are three plays. The play you write, the play that the actors discover in rehearsals, and the play that the audience find in performance. In a kind of a way, my job is done. Now, I know there will be rewrites, so I'll be available to rewrite the script during rehearsals, and I love that process. I love the idea that when an actor has an idea about his character as he begins to inhabit the role, you know, an actor will often say, I just feel that at this point he should do this, or something should happen here, or I feel very strongly that what's going on. And if I really feel, yeah, that's fantastic, that's great, then that gives me again that enthusiasm to go away and maybe run with that idea a little bit, and develop maybe a section of the play that I had felt was underdeveloped, or a line of the character in the story that didn't kind of quite make sense. And maybe the actor has brought a lot of light on that, a lot of clarity. And then I can go away with that and work on it, and then give it back to Martin. But it's important for me also not to be trying to be a director of the piece.
I think, to be honest, it probably is in the third or fourth week of rehearsals. You're still in the business of speculating. But if you've experienced the process, you begin to know whether there's life in the show and there's life in the scenes. Now, that life can be something, sometimes it might be to do with tension, sometimes it might be to do with laughter, sometimes it might be, but ultimately, I suppose the key word is truth, whether you kind of feel something is true, and it's interesting. And if you, as a director, are engaged by it, because I suppose another responsibility of the director, one way of thinking about the director, is that in a way he or she is the audience during the rehearsal period. He has to or she has to kind of anticipate how the play is looking and sounding and reading from the audience's perspective. So I sit, you know, outside of the rehearsal area, the stage area, and in that sense I'm supposed to have the eyes and ears of the audience. So I think if you're pulled into it and engaged yourself and you find it, you know, interesting, then it's likely that that moment is working or that scene is working.
I think there is a need for national theatre. I mean, there's one line of thought that would say that national theatres are obsolete, that we've moved into a kind of post-national world, that I don't think that's the case. I still think the fact that we are interested enough in the national theatre to talk about it on its 100th anniversary suggests that it's important to people in varying ways. And, I mean, that may sound like a kind of easy answer to it, but I think that in itself proves that there is an interest, a need in Ireland for some kind of national theatre.
One of the problems the Abbey has in the contemporary sense is that I think people are looking to it to do everything, to encourage new writing, to deal with tradition, to deal with the canon, to deal with the history, and do lots of things, and then also to operate from a base in Dublin city centre, and then tour, and all of that. I think there's too many expectations. That is a real burden, because those expectations are sitting on the Abbey's shoulders, but it's not resourced to fulfil many of them. So it can only ever fulfil some. So, you know, if it was actually to start to, as a model of a national theatre, not just as it is as the Abbey, but if the model of a national theatre is about for the nation, then what this nation is not at all clear at the moment.
Well, I always think of the audience. I mean, if you're writing in the theatre and you're not thinking of the audience, you're in real, real trouble, I think. Yeah, I'm really acutely conscious of the audience. So that I'll always be looking for the comic moment. I mean, I think my work is suffused with humour because I think it's our saving grace in a way, you know. Being able to see the funny side of something, even at the darkest moment, you know. Being able to rise above the defeats, the reverses of life, you know. That somehow you can manage to pick yourself up, dust yourself off and kind of see the funny side of things that weren't funny at the time. And also the seriousness of people, you know, and I play a lot on that too in terms of poking fun at the Redzer character and how serious he is about everything and so on. And when we talk about universality, you see, you can't write the universal play. Things are parochial. You know, in a way, trying to get away from the parochialness is a mistake sometimes. Bertolt Brecht said that the most parochial was the most universal. And he may be true, you know. Paddy Kavanagh said the War of Troy was a parochial affair. They're both right.
Why are you not at school?
I'm on the Mitch.
I thought you loved school.
Not anymore. Hate school now.
I was sent out to get you.
I'm not going in.
You'll be sent away if you don't come to school.
I'll be sent away even if I do.
You're the brainiest in the class. What are you starting to Mitch now for?
I'm celebrating.
What's there to celebrate?
The fact that I'm a prime suspect in a robbery.
One of the reasons I'm attracted to the play is actually that it has one foot in a particular sort of realism, and that's almost has a kind of a like a documentary reality to it. But it has another foot, or if you can have a foot planted in fantasy, a wing, maybe kind of that's touching into the sort of more fantastical thing. There's also a kind of quite strong marking in the play of the darkness of that society as well, you know, the issues to do with alcoholism and drink and issues to do with school and corporal punishment. So in that sense, that is embedded in the truth of the play. There is another truth, which is actually about acknowledging that but rising beyond it too. And in that sense, it's a comic piece, not in the sense of laughs, although there are a lot of laughs in it, but comic in its impulse. I mean, it ends with a kiss, and it ends up with the character saying, "It's not every day that this happens." And I think that sense of the special and the surprise and the transforming is a dominant note in the play.
It's not so specific that it would isolate anybody in any way. It's just a lovely story being very well told. So I think it's got a very broad appeal. And what I like particularly about it is that because the two central protagonists are young boys, young men, teenagers, you know, it's kind of got an all ages feel to it, you know. So, you know, the aspiration is that we'll be able to appeal to the younger audiences as well as maybe the more established theatre going adults from, you know, this local community, but also then across Dublin and the country.
Hello, Pam. Standing by fire announcement sound Q2, sound Q3, 4, 5, 5.5, and sound Q6. Stand by at XQ.6 and XQ3 and 4. Fire announcement and sound Q2, go.
Welcome to the Peacock Theatre. We would like to remind you to switch off your mobile phone and take a note of your nearest fire exit. We hope you enjoy the performance, and once again, please make sure that your mobile phone has been switched off.
I thought it was very good, pretty interesting.
It's just about old days. Lucky lumps. They should bring them out more often.
I thought it was great. Yeah, really enjoyed it. The interaction with the audience, the eye contact was excellent. I thought the actors were really, really good. Probably thought it was very true to sort of the Sheridan upbringing.
That's very good. It was a good play. Dialogue was good. The acting was superb. Storyline, you know, I'm from the early anyway, and I see it every day. But certainly the cast was great. And it was very funny.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.